Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Watching the Tudors.
Hello.
We're back.
Yay.
We had a summer in there.
Yep.
We didn't get to do anything, but we're getting back on track now. So this is the show where we watch the Tudors and break down the drama, the stories behind the drama. And I'm Heather.
And I'm Jonathan.
And I've been podcasting about Tudor England on my podcast, the Renaissance English History Podcast, since 2009.
And I've been hearing about history ever since I met her.
And we thought it would be fun to go through and watch the Tudors again and talk about the fact and the fiction and everything like that behind this most popular series.
And for me, it's watching it the first time, and I don't know anything about all this stuff, so I'm constantly left with cliffhangers that Heather already knows the endings to.
But do you know, I don't know if you remember, in 2008, for my birthday, you bought me a DVD set of the Tudors.
Yeah, I kind of sort of remember that.
Yeah.
It was like a premonition.
Yeah, right? You knew that 10 years later we'd be doing this.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we are back in season 3, and this is episode 2. And there's a cat wandering around here.
So if you hear strange sounds.
A new addition to our family this summer was a kitten that was found in the road.
Yeah.
Literally. Anyway, so we've got all kinds of drama happening. Jane.
It's all happening. I thought things were complicated before.
You did.
And now the country's on fire.
Literally.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, at least the northern part of the country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild.
Yeah. So we've got Jane bringing Mary back to court.
Uh-huh.
We've got Henry's leg. We've got Cardinal Pole, which we're going to talk about that. And the church getting involved in these politics. And then we've got a rebellion going on.
It's all happening, really.
It is. So do you want to start asking me some questions and we can just go through it?
Yes. Okay.
All right.
So it seems as if Charles Brandon wants Cromwell's head out of all this.
Well, you know, I don't know that Cromwell and Charles Brandon were ever good friends with each other. There was
there's a big gap between aren't good friends and that guy should die.
Yeah, well, I think Charles Brandon was always a little bit more conservative. Was one of the conservative ones, and also he didn't really, you know, he didn't like Wolsey either. He kind of didn't like these new men, even though it could be argued that he himself was a newer person.
Yeah,
so maybe that made him not like them even more.
Yeah, I think maybe it was just the whole religious aspect of we're on God's side, so we're going to kill a bunch of people. Maybe he wasn't down with that idea.
I don't know. And I also think that he just could see that he wasn't really particularly trustworthy, and he switched sides a lot. That's probably how he saw it. You know, like first he was on Team Anne, and then he was like bringing Anne's downfall about.
And
I think he probably just kind of thought like...
Probably wants a rat out of it.
Cromwell only has about 3 years left, so we're good.
So then the leg with Henry and his gross
Let's
bone
talk
chips.
About Henry's leg.
Yeah. So what would he have needed in like today's world like to have gotten better? I mean, not that you were there and you're a doctor, but
no, but I've talked to a couple of people who have studied this, who have looked at Tudor medicine and stuff like that. And the thing that people all say is all he really needed was antibiotics.
So you maybe know, like if, a 3 week course.
Yeah.
Of...
He had an infection or he had a wound. The wound got infected. And then he had an ulcer and an abscess that kept bursting.
Yeah.
And it would heal over and then it would burst and then it got very messy. Yeah. So he would have had to probably have had that drained and then have a course of antibiotics.
Yeah.
And instead, they were rubbing these poultices on it, some of which had lead, which actually there's a theory that he wound up having lead poisoning.
Yeah,
one of the
it kind of makes you mad, right?
Exactly. One of the side effects of that is mental issues.
Yeah.
And so there's this whole theory around him and the lead poisoning. And yeah, they were basically like torturing him.
Yeah.
And because they didn't know anything different.
Yeah. And so some of it probably made it a little worse.
Yeah. And to be fair, I mean, we kind of knock this whole pre-modern medicine medical world, but they actually did have, there were probably some natural antibiotic properties in some of the plants that they were using. Yeah. And, you know, maybe that's why he lived as long as he did.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't kill him. So.
Right. He lived for another 11 years after this. Yeah. So, you know, it's not like he died right away. Yeah. But yeah, you know, that's another long-term effect. There's a whole book that Susanna Lipscomb wrote called 1536. And it's like, basically that's the year that Henry became the Henry that we remember, the tyrant Henry. Before then, he was still decent and, you know, in his...
Well, it's just funny because I only know him from this show.
Right.
So I'm only just getting... He seems pretty tyrannical already.
But he doesn't seem worse than, like, a normal king.
I guess. You know? I don't know. I don't know any kings. So
right.
This all...
Also, this show started with... What was it? The Field of Cloth of Gold was the very first scene in 1520. So that's already 11 years into his reign.
Yeah.
You know, when he first came to the throne, he was 17. Yeah, 17, I guess. And he was just this handsome, nice young guy and whatever. And, you know, he's slowly becoming this corpulent tyrant.
How long was he with Catherine?
20 couple. Well, he married her in 1509. And then the whole stuff with Anne Boleyn started in around 1526, 27.
Jeez.
And then he finally
put her aside in 1533. Like 18 years before all that stuff.
Yeah. And during that time, you know, he had a couple of mistresses. It's debatable. He actually, to be fair to Henry, he didn't have that many compared to what your average king had. Yeah. He was pretty old fashioned and conservative when it came to his, he only had one son with Bessie Blount that we know of. Mary Boleyn probably. Yeah. And there were some others in there, but you know, and there were like Anne of Cleves' father, right? We said he had 92 children that were illegitimate children. I think it was 92. It was some enormous amount. So, you know, he was pretty old fashioned and conservative for a king, but anyway, yeah. So 1536 is kind of the year where Henry becomes the person that we remember. And a lot of it is because of this leg injury. And if you just think about it, he's in pain.
Yeah.
Like I know what it's like to be in pain. Yeah. And it just colors everything. Like, and plus you think about it, like if you're the king and you're in pain, it's like, you're supposed to be able to like fix stuff.
Yeah.
Like it's not just like a normal human being. And it's just like, this isn't supposed to happen to me. I'm the bloody king.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he become like his own doctor after that? Because he kind of seemed like, oh, I'm going to figure this out.
Or yeah.
Did he?
He'd always been into medicine. He was very much hypochondriacal, and it was a personality trait of Henry's. You remember in the scene or in the show where the
big
sweating sick
box.
He had the box of all of his potions, and he was always moving around. And, you know, his brother died likely of, and they think it was probably of the sweat. It's still debatable, but that's a likely explanation. And then, you know, his mother died when she was only 37, and his father, he lost several brothers and sisters. Only three of them made it to adulthood out of, I think there were seven originally. And so, which was normal for then, but it would have made you a little bit hypochondriacal. And he always had a really keen interest in medicine and in figuring stuff out. So he definitely would have taken an active part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Brandon arrives in London expecting there to be like a big force waiting for him.
The whole thing, they kind of mix around a number of different roles here, because it was like the Duke of Norfolk was actually the one that was going to talk to the rebels, and they show Brandon doing that. I don't even think I saw Norfolk anywhere in this scene or in this show.
So it's all just kind of mixed up. Like,
yeah.
Someone showed up in London at some point.
Somebody showed up. People. I mean, I think the gist of this is to show that like the country was not prepared for
it. Just wasn't
what was
it
going
just
on
wasn't
here.
Organized. It's just sort of.
And also the other thing, I think it's important to talk about this because this is the age before there's a standing army. Mm-hmm. So, you know, now there's armies.
Yeah.
And even like Henry is famous for having built up the Royal Navy, for example, with his big ships. Before this period, if a king wanted to go to war on the sea, he had to like borrow merchant ships, you know, and that's still how it was with the army, that there wasn't a standing army. So you had to rely on all of these different people to bring own people from their lands.
Yeah.
And, you know, the people who lived on your lands were obligated to a certain extent, you know, to fight.
Such an odd thought.
Yeah.
Like, thinking of like an army is just a bunch of people who like wish they could be home working, but they like got called up by their duke or whoever who they like, you know, owe a favor to. And it's like, this sucks.
And there were laws around, like, for example, there were laws that on Sundays men had to practice archery for 2 hours or something. And so, you know, there were laws that were trying to keep people ready.
Active. Yeah.
If they needed to be. But there wasn't like a standing army where you could say, okay, these troops go here. You really were reliant on, like, then we see with Lord Darcy and defending Pontefract Castle, like you were reliant on these nobles who, in theory, it was this whole idea of like, you give them the land, then they need to protect it.
So it's like everyone was kind of in like the army reserve.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but the thing is like, nobody was prepared for this really. And that's why they were able to get as far as they did. I think it'd be interesting to see a study of preparedness for the Pilgrimage of Greece.
Yeah.
But there isn't one that I know of. Just people weren't really ready for it.
So what was like the breakdown in the people? Like, so I was just thinking, there was the clip where it showed the girl from the court, you know, saying stuff about those heathen kind of Catholics and their old ways.
Yeah.
And Jane seemed to be, you know, upset. Was there kind of like a generic breakdown of people who were Protestant and Catholic, or was it just kind of randomly spread?
No, it's actually interesting because there was a history in England of a reform movement in the east of the country with the Lollards of the 14th and 15th century.
Okay.
That was a movement. And then with the people at court, and also in the southern, like in the home counties and the places where there was trade, basically if there was trade with the places where these new ideas were forming, like with the German states and with like the Low Country.
But it was like locational, I guess.
It was a lot of it, yeah. So if you were closer to the court and if you had trading relationships, even if you were in deep Sussex or something and you never went to court, if you had these kind of trading relationships with the Germans or the people in the Low Countries or something, you would probably be more open just because you would talk to those people. You've
heard about these ideas and people tell you about it.
Yeah, and you probably have seen the literature, even if it wasn't supposed to come in, you've probably had a chance to see it if you were literate and stuff like that. So those kind of people were more open to it. Now, the further you got away from court and the further you got from that.
Yeah. It's just this foreign idea.
And a lot of people have said, you know, basically like Cromwell was able to bring this Reformation in and Anne Boleyn and all that when the majority of England probably didn't want it.
Yeah. I mean, that's what just seems kind of strange to me. Like, It just reminds me of things in today's world where like vocal minorities, you know, kind of can get what they want sometimes.
Yeah.
Even though it's like 5% of people.
Yeah.
They're just really loud and won't shut up.
And they had access to the king and they were, you know, it's.
Exactly. Well, if you surround the king, I mean, that's like in these times, if you surround the king.
Yeah.
It seems like that's what's going on. Like, it seems like that's the way things are going.
Yeah.
It's so there is the way things are going around you.
There is this thought of like, if Arthur Tudor had never died and Henry never became king, you know, would England have become Protestant?
That's wild.
And, you know, I think that to a certain extent, there probably would have been a reform in the church just because there was this history of wanting reform with the Lollards.
Yeah.
So there probably would have been some kind of openness to a movement like that, but I don't know that it would have gone to the extent that it went.
When and where? I mean, would it have happened in the next 100 years?
Or? Exactly. Yeah.
All right. So then the castle, like they really rolled the big crew rolled up on the...
The big crew rolled up on it. Yep. They sure did.
And that was the guy's name, Darcy?
Lord Darcy, yeah.
Yeah. And in Yorkshire?
Pontefract Castle, yeah.
Pontefract.
And he kind of willingly turned it over. He's then executed, but we'll see that later.
Yeah.
For treason.
And then, so the rebels, like.
Oh, we never put in our spoiler alert. We haven't done this in a while. Okay. I just said he was executed. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. In case you didn't know, we might give things away in the future. So.
I'll put it in the notes.
All right.
Hello, kitten.
Kitten alert.
Kitten alert. It's kitten and spoiler alert.
The rebellion, the rebels.
Yes, the rebels.
They were basically, like, they were kind of representing the people.
Mm-hmm.
And representing them in that they wanted to remain Catholic and have their churches back.
Yeah, I mean, a big thing of it was just, and we've talked about this before, the role that the church had in everyday life for people.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they were church, like the school and the hospital.
The hospital, the hospitality, the all like hotels, all of it, doctors, all of those people. It was the church that did that. And also just, it's hard to understand for us in a secular world how much of your day and your life was consumed by things of the church. The church dictated what you could eat on certain days, you know, mm-hmm. like every Wednesday and Friday was a fast day and all of Advent and all of Lent and, you know, all of this kind of stuff. So that was ingrained in you. You went to church X amount of times per day or X amount of times per week. And that was dictated by the church. It dictated the days that you could have sex, you know, and it was like, everything, and not like people actually abided by that, but there was this whole, you know, kind of thing. So the church was such a powerful force in England before the Reformation, and it's hard for us to wrap our heads around that. And if it happens so quickly, and you're not even in the place where it is happening, where these decisions are being made,
mm-hmm.
so you're just getting the trickle down of it. I mean, it's like no, this is like our way of living. Like, yeah. What are you doing here?
Yeah.
Because Thomas Cromwell wants to do something, you know, who's bloody Thomas Cromwell?
So then, yeah, we talked about Henry ruling in pain. That must have been rough.
It must have been really rough.
And then they were showing more of the fighting. Like, when did guns show up on the scene?
So there were the Chinese invented gunpowder in like the 10th century, something like that. And they used it for fireworks and things like that. It wasn't really used in Europe until like the 14th, 15th century. You start to see it, but it was really unstable. Yeah, you know, you'd like load a gun a cannon, it would like explode all over. Yeah. And so it was more of like, if you were going to besiege a castle, it was, you'd bring your cannon in, more like out of like
special.
And it was also to scare them, you know, because if you were behind a wall and this person, they brought this big giant cannon up, you'd be like, oh, holy crap. Right.
Yeah.
Like that thing can go through our
castle. No problem. Oh, like, they got a giant cannon.
Never mind. Yeah. And so it was for intimidation a lot of times too. Guns were starting to be used by this time. A lot of times it would be also during the Wars of the Roses, there were specific regiments or specific people in the Duke's men or, you know, in the army, as such as it was, that specialized in being able to use guns. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't a lot of people and they weren't very good at it.
Yeah.
So often they found that, you know, it was more trouble than it was worth.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do they know Brandon was camped out, like when they were shooting these guns, they were like training. Like, mm-hmm. did they actually know the farmhouse where they camped out on?
Well, there was something. Yeah. I was just looking that up and they do have a couple of these farmhouses still that you can see. There's one, I was looking for that one you said in Newark, and I didn't find that one, but I found a couple that are still there. I don't know that they know exactly which farmhouse it is, but there are a couple that they know.
That would have served those purposes. And
exactly.
Things. And then those numbers are pretty accurate. Like Shrewsbury had 6,000, and the whole rebellion was around 30,000.
Yes.
Wow. That's a lot of people.
Yes, it was.
That's a big operation.
It really, and when you think about it in terms of like, working age men who, you know, I mean, it was like a huge percentage of.
Okay. So then who was the father? I guess later we learned his name, Reginald Pole. Like he was a father, like a pastor.
Yes.
And then they made him a bishop. They told him, you're going to go shopping for mercenaries and you're going to become a cardinal. Or
we saw him at the beginning of this last season go to the Pope and say, or at the beginning of season three, well, which has been a long time ago now, show up and say, I want to be here and serve the Pope. He was the son of a woman called Margaret Pole. Margaret Pole was the Countess of Salisbury in her own right. I think she was maybe the first woman to ever hold that, hold a position like that in her own right.
Okay.
Now, she was the daughter, Margaret Pole was the daughter of the Duke of Clarence, who was one, who was the brother of Edward the Fourth. So Margaret Pole would have been cousins with Elizabeth the First, who is Edward the Fourth's daughter. Basically, she was related to the line. There were the three sons. We talked about this in the Wars of Roses. Mm-hmm. Edward, the three brothers, Edward the Fourth, Richard the Third, and the Duke of Clarence. And Edward the Fourth was the one who became king. Then the Duke of Clarence rebelled against him, and Richard, and he was killed, drowned in a vat of Malmsey wine, they say. Mm. And then Richard III became king after Edward IV died because he did or did not kill his nephews. He probably did. So, anyway, I don't know, but he probably did. So, the Duke of Clarence is this one in the middle, and his daughter is Margaret Pole. So then her son is Reginald Pole. So he is the grandson of the Duke of Clarence. So if Henry Tudor isn't king now, the other lines are all out.
Yeah.
He could potentially be the ruler.
Wow.
Yeah. Did you understand all that?
I kind of tuned out.
Oh.
Like in the middle.
Okay.
But that's
cool. He's kind of the last of the Plantagenet line.
Yeah. He's a Plantagenet.
He's a Plantagenet. His mother will be executed. She was like 70 something at the time.
Jeez.
And she apparently fought it off.
Yikes.
Like, tried. She kept running around.
Sounds like something an old lady would do. You ain't killing me. Ah.
Apparently there were something like 13 strokes to get her head off.
Oh my gosh. So then, yeah, we said, we don't know if Brandon particularly met with the people, but someone met with the rebels.
Yes. Norfolk. Norfolk was the one who was going there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And then there was this scene real quick in the... back in the castle or whatever with the king. And he said something about the shrine of Thomas Becket.
Ah, yes.
What is that?
Well, Thomas Becket was...
Or who is that? Or
so Thomas Becket was the Archbishop of Canterbury, who was appointed or nominated to be Archbishop of Canterbury under Henry II. Henry II was the first Plantagenet king. So look, it all comes full circle.
Wow.
Henry II was ruling... in 1154.
Whoa.
So you can add up how long those Plantagenets were on the throne, huh?
A long time.
That's like 350 odd years of Plantagenet rule.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's such a weird name.
Yeah. It comes from like the person that Matilda married, Geoffrey de Plantagenet. It was like French.
Okay.
Okay. So Thomas Becket, the king... nominated him thinking that he was going to do everything he wanted, that he was going to have this servant basically who was going to stand up to the Pope for the king's rights. Because there's this constant struggle. It's been going on forever between king and Pope. Where does papal jurisdiction end? Where does the king's jurisdiction begin?
So I'm guessing the guy who thought he was going to have his back.
Did not.
Yeah.
And then what happened was Henry got really ticked off about it. They fought for a long time. Thomas Becket actually had to leave and go to, I think he was in France for a while. And like he had to leave because he was
just exiled.
Yeah. And even though he was Archbishop of Canterbury, all of England was under an interdict for a while. It was all just a bad scene. And then they are supposedly make up and then they have a fight again. And Henry II says... in a group of people, will no one rid me of this archbishop who does no good to me, whatever. In this is like apocryphal, but that's supposedly what happened was that he said like, will no one get rid of this archbishop for me? Will no one rid me of him? So four of his knights think that that's a good idea. And they ride down to Canterbury and they murder him in cold blood right in the church.
Wow.
Yeah. And this was a really big deal.
Uh-huh.
Like Henry II had to do penance for it. Like... he had to go on his knees to Canterbury and like pray and all, and they made it a big shrine.
Whoa.
So by this point, the Shrine of Thomas Becket is like 400 years old almost. Yeah. And it's very important. It's a place where you go to pray. And it was one of the places that when, as they were dissolving the monasteries and getting rid of all of that kind of stuff, there was a lot of uprising because people did not want to lose their shrine of Thomas Becket.
And then who's the archbishop these days?
Thomas Cranmer.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
And who was the one before?
Wareham.
Wasn't Wolsey, it was someone else.
Wolsey was the York, Archbishop of York.
Okay, just...
Yeah.
Just all, going to visit the shrine and you're killing everyone and...
Yeah.
It's confusing.
Yeah.
All right.
So that was another Henry who got in trouble for papal...
Yeah.
...upset.
Yeah. Papal drama all over the place.
You thought you were just going to learn Tudor history with this. Look at this. You're learning... Early Plantagenet.
I mean, we're all over the map. We're all over the historical map in this
Pretty
show.
Pretty soon we're going to talk about the Viking invasions.
You don't even know. Going to bring in modern history, talk about the
No, I don't know anything after 1688.
Yeah, that's cool. All right. So
1688 was the Glorious Revolution.
There you go. Okay. That was a good year. So now Mary's back on the scene.
Mary is back on the scene.
And this is a thing? Like, Mary just is back?
Yep, Mary's back.
And like, hey.
Yep, she was reunited with him.
And then the king's, like, calling everyone out?
Yep, he's like you guys...
Everyone wanted to kill her?
And yep.
Man, it's getting wild.
Yep. Well, she apologized. She wrote her letter saying she was illegitimate, and she recognized it, and she should not have rebelled, and that was what Henry needed and wanted. And needed to have to make himself feel better. And so she's back.
That's wild. And then, Francis, the eye patch guy, was talking to her and he said, like, you know, will you please forgive me? Like, what was he talking about?
Because he was
one
of the people who went and threatened her.
Oh, and she was like staying at the house. Yeah. And he was like, yeah, you better sign this or I'm going to like cut you or something.
Exactly.
Okay. And then I was thinking about it because, you know, that Francis guy was like touching that girl's hair and she's like, no, I'm the king's. And I was just thinking about how they all get around. And were there STDs back then?
I think, yeah, there were. It wasn't as much as today. I think there was more kind of immunities to it. But there were still STDs. And I think there were just different kinds.
Yeah.
And I think... I'm trying to think. There were some different ones than we had. I read a book one time about Elizabethan prostitutes and the STDs that they had. It wasn't a whole book. It was a chapter in a book.
I was going to say, that's a lot of research. I don't know how you do that much research.
No, it was a chapter. And they were talking about the different kind of STDs, and they were somewhat different.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they still had, like, syphilis and stuff.
Good times.
Yeah.
So, do those two rebel commander guys, like, really go to the king and, like, kneel at him and and get yelled at?
Yeah, I mean, they were there and he invited them to come and made a show of wanting to, you know, bring his subjects back and all of that.
That's brave. I mean, that's brave.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just going into the heart of, like, the enemy, basically.
Yeah.
Woo. And was that more or less what was said between the king and those... commanders?
Yeah, I think, again, they added some dramatic effect kind of stuff. But the point, like, of it is that the king said he was willing to issue pardons and that he was willing to listen to their demands. And
I think I've asked you this like a million times, but it still interests me. Do we know, like, roughly what was said at these places? I mean, what kind of records? I mean, was there a guy, like, taking a transcription? I mean, not like a...
Yeah, not so much, but usually what would have happened is somebody like Cromwell would have written some notes or somebody would have written a letter to somebody, you know, to another noble.
So someone who couldn't have been there or something, you know, would have said that, you know, like, it's such a shame you couldn't have made the trip, but the king said this,
or even,
and blah, blah, blah.
Even not for that, but for to just keep them in the, like, Cromwell had relationships with other people that he was cultivating throughout the country to be his support, right? Okay. It was like it was this whole networking thing.
From accounts of stuff like that,
yeah,
we can know roughly.
Yeah.
Okay.
And a lot of them say different variations on the same
theme. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And different people telling different
sides of it. And also, like, letters from ambassadors, if there would have been, like, that's actually a lot of it, is you get letters from ambassadors written back to their country, and this is what's going on. And I heard somebody told me that in this meeting this happened, but then this other person said that in that meeting this happened. Yeah. So we're still trying to figure out which it was. And, you know, we think it was this based on this kind of stuff. And so there were a lot of letters that were written.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, well, we'll talk about it in a bit. When they left, they turned their back on the king. They would not have been able to do that, right?
No.
Okay.
No.
I didn't think so. It seemed all wrong.
Yeah, it was.
Is it Jane? Is that what her name?
Jane Seymour?
The wife?
Jane Seymour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Was Jane, like, really kind of pressuring him like that?
Yeah, there's some debate as to how much, but she definitely was sympathetic to them and was saying,
it'd be nice if...
Blah, yeah, blah, blah. And he had to tell her to
shut up.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I know you don't know what they talked about in their bedroom, but he's like, remember my last wife?
Yeah, exactly.
Whoa.
Okay, I'm done.
Yep. Yep. Do you want any dinner?
Yep.
Oh, man. Jeez. And then the church, like the Pope, were they really kind of okay with overthrowing the king? I mean, or was that like their goal, or just if it happened, whatever?
I think they would have been very happy to have somebody on the throne who was a Catholic.
Yeah. Okay. So
however that looked.
So they weren't necessarily going for that.
But if the king came back and apologized and came back, that would have been great. Yeah. And if he didn't, then get somebody else there.
And that's wild. It's a lot of power and money you're fighting over.
And, you know, that later became, I think I said this, that became the problem with Elizabeth and Mary, Queen of Scots, because Mary, Queen of Scots was cousin to Elizabeth, first cousin once removed, I think, because she was the next generation down. But anyway, and the Pope and the Catholics saw Elizabeth as illegitimate because Henry was still officially married to Catherine when Elizabeth was born, and they saw her as illegitimate. And so they're waiting in the wings, and Elizabeth's Protestant, and then they're waiting in the wings is nice Catholic, completely legitimate Mary Queen of Scots. And so all of the other Catholic countries and the Pope were like, let's make her queen.
Yeah.
And Elizabeth didn't really have a lot of choice of what to do with that.
Chopped her head off.
Yep.
That's rough.
And then they held her head up to say, this is what happens to the enemies of the king. And like, she's wearing a wig and her head went rolling.
Your nasty bald head.
I think she had gray hair, but yeah. What's that? What? All in
fruit. Like, just the king was eating his fruit from the new world. And he's like, yeah, I'm good with whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it was a strange scene. Like,
yeah, it was.
He's like, Cromwell, I'm good. I'm eating fruit. Like, just let whatever happens. We get a new person
in. I've got my fruit.
And we get a new person in. My leg hurts. And then they had the second meeting where they promised all the stuff, like with the parliament.
The parliament, all that kind
and
of
so
stuff.
Here's the thing. I mean, here's what's so weird for me. Because for me, so spoiler alert, if you don't want to know what happens with all of this, just skip it. Like, I didn't know if this was all going to happen.
Yeah.
Because they just leave you hanging.
Yeah.
No, I know, but you do.
I do, yeah.
Yeah. Should we tell everyone or just let it go?
We can just let it go.
Yeah. Because
I think we can end this just leave people with the idea that, yeah, they think it's going to happen.
Yeah. Just like it's amazing that all this stuff is going to happen.
They're like, we were successful. Our cause was successful. Yeah. Like, look at us. The king's listening to us.
And he's even having dude over to talk to him.
Yep.
I don't know if I trust that.
Nope.
All right.
Is that it?
I mean, I get that's pretty much it.
Because you were going to ask me what happens.
It's just a lot of question about what happens in the future, but we will find out in the future.
We will find out in the next episode. Well, the next, I think, a lot of this season.
It's in the past. Like, that's what's so crazy about history.
Well, thank you so much for listening to us. What?
Thank you.
Okay. And you can learn more about us at watchingtheshooters.com. You can learn more about my other podcast at englandcast.com. There's over 110 episodes there. You can learn all. Oh, and the new Tudor Radio Network is coming up too.
Yeah, there is there's a new way to listen to watching
podcasts,
the Tudors,
and music and talk shows from lots of different Tudor podcasters and stuff. So
24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
The TudorRadioNetwork.com. It's launching officially in December, but yeah. You can learn more about the project at TudorRadioNetwork.com.
And if you could leave us a review on iTunes, that'd be great. Five stars would be absolutely wonderful. Mm-hmm. If you hate the show, just send us an email instead. It's much more personal.
You can send an email to Jonathan. I don't like getting emails like that.
Jonathan.tesco@gmail.com.
Oh, God. All right. Thank you for listening. Bye.
Love you all. Bye.
On a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.